Good morning, Church. Mark 15, 21 to 39, page 1022. A certain man from Cyrene, Simon, the father of Alexander and Rufus, was passing by on his way in from the country, and they forced him to carry the cross. They brought Jesus to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. Then they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it, and they crucified him. Dividing up his clothes, they cast lots to see what each would get. It was 9 in the morning when they crucified him. The written notice on the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." They crucified 2 rebels with him, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, So you who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, come down from the cross and save yourself. In the same way, the chief priest and the teachers of the law mocked him among themselves. He saved others, they said, but he cannot save himself. Let this Messiah, this King of Israel, come down now from the cross. That way we may see and believe. Those crucified with him also heaped insults on him. At noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 in the afternoon. And at three in the afternoon, Jesus cried in a loud voice, "Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of those standing near heard this, they said, "Listen, he's calling Elijah." Someone ran, filled a sponge with wine vinegar, put it on a staff, and offered it to Jesus to drink. Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to take him down," he said. With a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last. The curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And when the centurion who stood there in front of Jesus saw how he died, he said, "Surely this man was the Son of God." This is the word of the Lord.
Chapter 2, page number you can see on the board there, 824. Lamentations, an Old Testament book. Each chapter sort of almost stands alone as a separate poem, but there is a bit of a progression as we go. But so if you weren't here last week, you've not missed a lot of story. The main point here is it's a book all about the collapse, the punishment of the city of Jerusalem by God. So chapter 2, beginning at verse 1, I'll read the whole chapter. "How the Lord has covered daughter Zion with the cloud of his anger. He has hurled down the splendor of Israel from heaven to earth. He has not remembered his footstool in the day of his anger. Without pity, the Lord has swallowed up all the dwellings of Jacob. In his wrath, he has torn down the strongholds of daughter Judah. He has brought her kingdom and its princes down to the ground in dishonor. In fierce anger, he has cut off every horn of Israel," and a horn is a symbol of strength. "He has withdrawn his right hand at the approach of the army. He has burned in Jacob like a flaming fire that consumes everything around it. Like an enemy, he has strung his bow. His right hand is ready. Like a foe, he has slain all who were pleasing to the eye. He has poured out his wrath like fire on the tent of daughter Zion. The Lord is like an enemy. He has swallowed up Israel. He has swallowed up all her palaces and destroyed her strongholds. He has multiplied mourning and lamentation for daughter Judah. He has laid waste his dwelling like a garden. He has destroyed his place of meeting. The Lord has made Zion forget her appointed festivals and her Sabbaths. In his fierce anger, he had spurned both king and priest. The Lord has rejected his altar and abandoned his sanctuary. He has given the walls of her palaces into the hands of the enemy. They have raised a shout in the house of the Lord, as on the day of an appointed festival. The Lord determined to tear down the wall around daughter Zion. He stretched out a measuring line and did not withhold his hand from destroying. He made ramparts and walls lament. Together they wasted away. Her gates have sunk into the ground. Their bars he has broken and destroyed. Her king and her princes are exiled among the nations. The law is no more, and her prophets no longer find visions from the Lord. The elders of daughter Zion sit on the ground in silence. They've sprinkled dust on their heads and put on sackcloth. The young women of Jerusalem have bowed their heads to the ground. My eyes fail from weeping. I'm in torment within. My heart is poured out on the ground because my people are destroyed, because children and infants faint in the streets of the city. They say to their mothers, "Where is bread and wine?" as they faint like the wounded in the streets of the city, as their lives ebb away in their mother's arms. What can I say for you? With what can I compare you, daughter Jerusalem? To what can I liken you that I may comfort you, daughter, virgin daughter Zion? Your wound is as deep as the sea. Who can heal you? The visions of your prophets were false and worthless. They didn't expose your sin or to ward off your captivity. The prophecies they gave were false and misleading. All who pass your way clap their hands at you. They scoff and shake their heads at daughter Jerusalem. Is this the city that was called the perfection of beauty, the joy of the whole earth? All your enemies open their mouths wide against you. They scoff and gnash their teeth and say, "We have swallowed her up. This is the day we've waited for. We have lived to see it." The Lord has done what he planned. He has fulfilled his word, which he decreed long ago. He has overthrown you without pity. He has let the enemy gloat over you. He has exalted the horn of your foes. Remember, horn is strength, so made the foes strong. The hearts of the people cry out to the Lord. You walls of daughter Zion, let your tears flow like a river day and night. Give yourself no relief, your eyes no rest. Arise, cry out in the night as the watches of the night begin. Pour out your heart like water in the presence of the Lord. Lift up your hands to him for the lives of your children who faint from hunger at every street corner. And here is the prayer. Look, Lord, and consider, whom have you ever treated like this? Should women eat their offspring, the children they've cared for? Should priest and prophet be killed in the sanctuary of the Lord? Young and old lie together in the dust of the streets. My young men and young women have fallen by the sword. You have slain them in the day of your anger. You have slaughtered them without pity. As you summoned to a feast day, so you summoned against me terrors on every side. In the day of the Lord's anger, no one escaped or survived. Those I cared for and reared, my enemy has destroyed. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. It's a strange word of the Lord. It's a very bleak part of the Bible. It's not a book that explains suffering. It doesn't really give the answer to why people suffer. It won't answer particular situations where you know someone who's suffering. It's a book on what suffering is like and how to cope in suffering. Lord, can we go on the next board? Have we got... here we go. Yes, three sections I'm going to look at. First, God is angry, verses 1 to 10. Verses 1 to 8 are full of words about what God has done. What has God done? Verse 1, how the Lord has covered daughter Zion with the cloud of his anger. He has hurled down the splendor of Israel from heaven to earth. He has not remembered his footstool in the day of his anger. Covered them with anger, hurled them down, not remembered. Doesn't mean he's not thinking about them, but not caring for them. What has he done? Verse 2. Without pity, the Lord has swallowed up all the dwellings of Jacob. In his wrath, he has torn down the strongholds of daughters of Judah. He has brought her kingdom and its princes down to the ground in dishonor. Swallowed up the homes, torn them down, brought them to the ground. And all this without pity. What has God done? Verse 4. Like an enemy, he has strung his bow. His right hand is ready. Like a foe, he has slain all who were pleasing to the eye. He has poured out his wrath like fire on the tent of daughter Zion. Strung his bow, that is to attack, slain and poured out his wrath. This is God acting, hurled the city down, brought the kingdom to the ground. Think of the before and after pictures that you have seen from places of war. I don't know if you can remember, it's not that long ago, Homs in the country of Syria, laid to waste. Mariupol in Ukraine, do you remember that? It wasn't long ago. But our news now is covered with Gaza City, isn't it? That's all that we hear about. But it's the same picture each time. The before picture, there are the streets lined with homes and buildings that are in use. And in the streets, there are people and vehicles moving. And then the after picture, where the buildings have been shattered and ruined and covered in dust, and there's only a few isolated people in the street, ruined. This chapter says, God has done this in anger. God has done this in anger, verse 1. How the Lord has covered daughter Zion with the cloud of his anger. It's in verse 3. In fierce anger he has cut off every horn of Israel. It's in verse 6. He's laid waste his dwelling like a garden. He's destroyed his place of meeting. The Lord has made Zion forget her appointed festivals and her Sabbath in his fierce anger. And anger is mentioned several other times in this chapter. This is his anger against Israel's sin. Now, God is not like us. His anger is not like our anger. It's not a sudden loss of temper. It's very important that we understand that about God's anger. Verse 8, the Lord determined to tear down the wall around daughter Zion. He didn't do it because he lost his temper. He planned to do it. He decided to do it and carried that out. A surprising thing that happens in this chapter is in God's anger, he destroys their religion. Verse 6, he has laid waste his dwelling like a garden. He has destroyed his place of meeting. That's the temple. So that's the place, his palace within the city of Jerusalem where they would go to honour him. And he wants to get rid of it, wants to demolish it. Carries on in verse 6. The Lord has made Zion, a word for Jerusalem, forget her appointed festivals and her Sabbaths. What, getting rid of their religion. Cancelling it, like we're cancelling the singing this evening, but for us it's for a good reason, but that was because of their sin. God is cancelling their festivals. Same thing in verse 7. The Lord has rejected his altar. That was the place where sacrifices were burned within the temple, essential for honouring God. So what happens there now? Verse 7, the Lord has rejected his altar and abandoned his sanctuary. He has given the walls of her palaces into the hands of the enemy. They have raised a shout in the house of the Lord as on the day of an appointed festival. So on a Sunday, we come in here, we sing. We sing to God. On their festivals, they came into the temples. They would sing to God. But now God has appointed a day when the enemies will come in. And they're not singing. The noise they're making is a shout of victory. Because God has sent them in to destroy this place. Same idea in verse 9. Her gates have sunk to the ground. Their bars he has broken, destroyed. Her king and her princes are exiled among the nations. The law is no more, and her prophets no longer find visions from the Lord. The law is the word in the Old Testament for God's instruction. It's not rules about where you park your car and ewes and that sort of thing. This is rules about how you live in your house and how you get on with your neighbour. It's God's instruction, but it's been lost. And God is no longer speaking through his messengers, the prophets. It's interesting, when God punishes in the Old Testament, he sometimes punishes by being silent. That's punishment from God, but he stopped speaking to his people. Imagine you go to the government office, in the UK office. I don't know if this office exists, because I never had to do it. Imagine there is a place where you go to apply for a visa, for leave to remain. You've been there before, but you have to go back. As you get off the tube, you come out, and there the staff who you used to meet in the visa office are begging. You get to where the building was, and it's surrounded by boarding. and you look over the top of the boarding, you can see the great arms and the claws of the machinery that are demolishing the building. There's no way of you having a visa. You can't stay anymore. That's a bit of a picture of what's happening here. The temple in Jerusalem is crushed, laid to waste. God is acting, and God is angry, and in his anger he shuts down their religion. No more temple, no more festivals, no more messages from God. That's important. If we are believers in Jesus Christ, that we know who our God is. God's reaction to Israel's sin in the Old Testament here is furious. And he's not wrathful despite his love. He's wrathful because he loves. Anger isn't the opposite of love. The opposite of love, according to the Bible, is indifference. Because God cares that he's angry. If we only talk to others and preach to others about the God of love, we've misled them because God is angry. Now, the problem is our anger is very different from his anger. Our anger flares up, and it will normally flare up because I don't get what I want or because you've got in the way of what I was doing. That's human anger. It's an emotion that comes when we're frustrated. So it's hard to think, well, how can God be angry? Because our anger is normally wrong. And the reason God can be angry is his anger is not wrong. It's not like ours. It's not because he wants something and someone gets in his way. He's angry because he cares for people. And his anger is part of his love. So next heading, please, Aniola. God is angry. The chapter says, who can help when God is angry? Let's look first at verse 11. There's a new element that comes into the picture, which is the suffering of children. My eyes fail from weeping. I'm in torment within. My heart is poured out to the ground because my people are destroyed, because children and infants faint in the streets of the city. They say to their mothers, where is bread and wine? As they faint like the wounded in the streets of the city, as their lives ebb away in their mother's arms. They're asking, where is food? Where is drink? The older children are dying out in the streets. The young children are dying in their mother's arms, which is where they're meant to be cared for. Now, I've mentioned already recent conflicts we've seen in the news, and it is often the case that the news tellers give us pictures of children, don't they? Because we see it, it's so terrible when children are suffering. Do you remember the chaotic withdrawal from Kabul in Afghanistan when the British and the American forces left and it wasn't well organized? There were people running into the airport and trying to get onto planes that were taking off. It was chaos. But the image that stays with me from that was a woman handing her baby over the fence to one of the American soldiers, I think, desperate for their child to be taken out of this country, taken to safety. Well, there's no escape like that in this judgment on Jerusalem. The children were withering away. So the writer says to the city, who can heal you? It's at the end of verse 13. Let me read 13. What can I say for you? With what can I compare you, daughter of Jerusalem? To what can I liken you that I may comfort you, virgin daughter Zion? Your wound is as deep as the sea. Who can heal you? Who can heal? Who can help when God is angry? Who could? Who could help? Could the prophets? Verse 14. The visions of your prophets were false and worthless. They didn't expose your sin to ward off your captivity. The prophecies they gave you were false and misleading. This is not God's messengers, Amos and Isaiah, people like that. This is the false prophets the people preferred. Their messages were useless because they didn't warn them and tell them they needed to change. They couldn't help. Who can help when God is angry? Verse 15. All who pass your way clap their hands at you. They scoff and shake their heads at daughter Jerusalem. Is this the city that was called the perfection of beauty, the joy of the whole earth? So the passerbys are not helping. They just look and shake their heads. Now that's a statement about Jerusalem that's in the Old Testament. We sing it sometimes, don't we? The city of our God, the holy earth. The city of our God, the holy place, the joy of the whole earth. That's what was said of Jerusalem. But now look at it. Ruined. They're not helping. Who can help when God is angry? Not the passers-by. Verse 16. All your enemies open their mouths wide against you. They scoff and gnash their teeth and say, "We've swallowed her up. This is the day we've waited for. We've lived to see it." These people certainly aren't going to help. They've longed to destroy the city. Who can help when God is angry? Who can heal? The prophets couldn't. They were liars. The passers-by couldn't. All they could do was look and say, "This is extraordinary." The enemies didn't want to. It's God himself who's made the wound, verse 17. The Lord has done what he planned. He has fulfilled his word, which he decreed long ago. He has overthrown you without pity. He has let the enemy gloat over you. He has exalted the horn of your foes. The Lord has done this. So who can help when the Lord is angry? So the Bible next says, pray to the Lord. Pray to the Lord for help. Verse 18. The hearts of the people cry out to the Lord. You walls of daughter Zion, let your tears flow like a river day and night. Give yourself no relief, your eyes no rest. Don't go to bed. Don't lie down. Stay up. Pray. Verse 19. Arise, cry out in the night as the watches of the night begin. So through the night, the watchmen would take shifts. At each point, be praying. Don't be drifting off. Pour out your heart like water in the presence of the Lord. Lift up your hands to him for the lives of your children who faint from hunger at every street corner. Again, the mention of the children. Cry out to God. So God is angry. Who can help when God is angry? Cry out to God. Anyway, the next point, please. The last part of the chapter. Zion, the city, does cry out to God. Verse 20. Look, Lord, and consider. Whom have you ever treated like this? Now, this is not hating God. It's not saying to God, "Go, you know, get lost." But it is crying out to God, "What are you doing?" Think about who you are doing this to, God. This is your people. This is your holy people. This is your holy place. These are your chosen people. And he gives two examples of suffering. The women and the priests. Should women eat their offspring, the children they've cared for? It's a terrible picture of what was happening. Should that happen? No, it shouldn't. Of course it shouldn't. Should priests and prophets be killed in the sanctuary of the Lord? So the people who would be praying in the temple and helping people there, they have now died and their shed blood is making that defiled before God. Should that happen? No, it shouldn't. That is terrible. Verse 21, death has come from the Lord on the day of his anger. Young and old lie together in the dust of the streets. My young men and young women have fallen by the sword. You, this is speaking to God, have slain them in the day of your anger. You have slaughtered them without pity. And verse 22 repeats ideas from earlier. As you summon to a feast day, remember the writer talking about coming to the temple, bringing the enemies to the feast day. As you summon to a feast day, so you summoned against me terrors on every side. You've not called pilgrims to come for one of the celebrations, you know, like we have Christmas and Easter. You've not called them to come. You have called my terrors, the things I'm afraid of. They're the new pilgrims. It's the day of anger. No one can help. No one can escape. So there's no answer or explanation to suffering in this chapter. Well, there is the explanation that they are guilty for their sin. It doesn't explain it away, and it doesn't give a solution. But it does say, pray to God. And when we're suffering, it can be easy to do anything apart from praying to God. But that's what this chapter ends up telling us to do. How do we link with this? Last week we thought a bit about the difference between them in the Old Testament and us now as Christians. Anielu, could you put the next image up? Here we go. Why we don't belong in this part of the Bible. And the reason we don't is that they suffered punishment for sin, and God destroys the temple in Jerusalem. We don't go to the Jerusalem temple anymore because it has been destroyed. So we're not in that time in history. We're a different situation because Jesus has been punished for our sins. And as he was punished, he began the new temple. Let's turn to Mark 15 again and see how that happened. That was the passage that Grace read for us. It's page 1023. We won't go back to Lamentations, so don't worry about losing your place there. Mark chapter 15, page 1023. It's the time when Jesus was hung on a cross to die. As he was dying, people passed by and shook their heads. Verse 29, those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads. Remember that? That's happened back in Lamentations chapter 2. The passers-by shake their heads at you. Say, you were great. Look at you now. You're nothing. Jesus shouts out himself, verse 34. And at 3 PM, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? And that's what Jerusalem was crying out in Lamentations. So the passers-by mocking him, Jesus naked, exposed, feeling abandoned by God. That's all the picture of what happened to Jerusalem. Jerusalem was guilty for their sin. Jesus now is like the guilty people of God. He is suffering their punishment as he died. And they shout to him in verse 29. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, so you who are going to destroy the temple and build it again in 3 days, build it in 3 days. Again, mentioning the destruction of the temple that we've seen mentioned all through Lamentations chapter 2. And the temple did begin to be destroyed as Jesus died. The curtain was torn. But he was actually talking about the destruction of his body. And he would raise it to life again on the third day and begin the new temple. But you see how Lamentations chapter 2 points us ahead to the death of Jesus. He suffered the punishment for the guilty people of God. Mocked. People shook their heads at him. But it was the time of the end of the temple and the beginning of the new temple. So we're in a new situation. It doesn't mean we learn nothing from Lamentations, Aniela. Thank you. We can learn from this part of the Bible. We are similar to them because we suffer, and in two particular ways. God's enemies humiliate Jesus' people. They'll laugh at it. They'll laugh at us. And the second thing, we suffer because we're in a broken world. Christians grieve when loved ones die. Christians are made redundant. Christians lose friends who move away. We suffer in the way that the world suffers in many ways. So we can learn from this book how to lament. Let's just recap the chapter then and look at two lessons from it. God is angry. So the question, who can help when God is angry? No one. The only thing to do is to cry to God. What does this teach us about lament? Next image. We can, I don't know why I said and. We can. It should say we can learn to lament. First of all, talking time and speaking about the loss, I've miswritten that as well. It takes time. So this is chapter 2. Last week, looked at chapter 1, and the story hasn't really changed. We're just looking at different aspects of the suffering of Jerusalem this week. But it's not like a story is going on and things are changing. And that's what grieving is like often. It goes round in circles. It's not an easy, straightforward story. And it's good for us to recognize that, and the Bible to show us that. People who are grieving or lamenting, they don't just get over it. They live through it, and it takes time. There's some change as we go through all these five chapters. We'll see there's a bit of a change, but it's slow. And there's often a going round in circles and often going back. What is also there is lamenting means putting things into words. It can help to talk about the loss. And that's particularly true when someone has lost a loved one, to talk about that person. A story might be that a widow is with some friends and one of them remembers a funny story about her husband who's died. And then, I won't tell that because it'll upset her. No, actually, she wants to hear that story. She might cry. But she might well laugh at the funniness of the story, but she wants us to keep talking about that person. When someone dies and you want to express care for them, it's very helpful if you write them a card and write in that card memories of the person who's died. Don't write a card and say, don't worry, it'll all get over. You'll get over it. It'll all be better soon. That's nonsense. You write them a card and you remember that person. And if you're a grieving person, it's helpful for you to talk about the person who's gone. But be careful who you talk to. You know, someone who's able to be sympathetic. Someone who you can trust. But do talk, because it's an important part of lamenting. And then the last point is we lament in praying. Lament is the word for these prayers in the Old Testament when people are suffering. It's not just talking about their suffering. It's crying out to God, and it's saying to God, why? And it's saying to God, help me. Doesn't turn their back on suffering, on God, doesn't turn their back on God, but pray. And the city that we saw back in Lamentations 2, when they prayed, they prayed in anger and in confusion. Her pain was too deep. No one could heal. No one could help. So she prayed to God. And he is the one to turn to in prayer when we're struggling like this. Let's have a moment's pause to think about these lessons, and then I'll lead us in a prayer. Almighty God, we thank you that your Son, Jesus Christ, suffered the pain and the punishment for guilty people. As he hung there naked, dying, people laughed at him and ridiculed him. And yet he did that so that we could be free from punishment, so that our punishment would go on him. We thank you. Please help us to be a Christian church that is realistic and honest about suffering in this life. That we would be helpful to people around us when they suffer. And teach us, please, when we suffer, to be good at talking to you, to crying out to you about it. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.